Welcome to Emotional Empowerment, a podcast for emotionally sensitive or struggling people who are open to learning how to use your emotions as a spiritual practice. Hi, I'm Michelle Bursell, and I've taught therapists, coaches, and people around the world how to use their negative feelings to heal their life, and in doing so, eliminated their struggle with anxiety, depression, anger, guilt, and more. Ready to turn your negative feelings into your greatest allies? Then let's start your emotional empowerment journey right now. Hello, everyone. Thank you so much for joining me. My name is Michelle Bursell, and today in episode number 2, we are talking about combining science and spirituality to create true emotional well-being. This episode really excites me. As I shared in episode number 1, the root of psychology comes from the study of our soul. But how this has shifted into more about studying the science of the mind is interesting, and it's very impactful in what is happening today in our society. What's happening where there's so many people struggling with their emotions, struggling with negative feelings, and they don't know why they are, and more importantly, what to do about it. Today, I want to share with you more how to combine what current science is saying and ancient spirituality has said to us. And in doing so, if that will open a space for you to create more love, understanding, and knowing of yourself. And that is what I really believe is the purpose of our emotions. So let's go back to what historians agree about with psychology. And that is that our interest in how we think and behave has been something that has been going on since ancient civilizations. Ancient Greek, Egyptian, Indian civilizations have had an interest in how we think and behave. As a part of the yoga teacher training I have gone through, I was shocked by how accurate the yogic texts are with being able to describe different aspects of our ego. I could not believe this is thousands of years old. They also go into detail of the pathways of how to change the quality of your mind so you can perceive yourself and your life from your essence, from your truth. Psychology continued to be a metaphysical study all the way up into the early 19th century until there were proponents who wanted a more stable understanding to explain the way the mind works. This is where we see the beginning of science shifting in how we define life. And part of the scientific thinking is that we can start to define life without a need in a belief in a higher power or God. And that through man's thinking, and it was men that were thinking this, we can understand our origins in a way that has nothing to do with spirituality. So this was happening in the early 18th century, as well as it was a time when people who studied psychology wanted to be seen with the prestige of medical doctors. So before this, the study of psychology was spiritual, it was metaphysical, it was philosophical. And so medicine was taking over. It was growing. Not only did medicine take over psychology from its connection to the soul and our essence, we also see during this time, this is when male doctors took over childbirth from midwives because their modern ideas and instruments they believed were more proven. They were better than what the midwives could do, even though the use of forceps caused high maternal mortality. So I'm sharing with you the doctors taking over childbirth because there is this sense of we are scientists, we are medical doctors, and we know better. Even though there has been midwives they're helping women birth, again, since ancient societies. So we see this shift where it's male, largely, if not all, white male perception of science and medicine. It's also a time when the ideals of the society were all about discipline and self-control. These are the values that was very important for people. So if we think about this, the beginning of the science of psychology was largely about diagnosing and therefore controlling women's emotional outbursts. Hysteria, which was around till 1980s, was basically the medical explanation for everything that men found mysterious or unmanageable in a woman. And it was a conclusion only supported by men and their dominance over medicine. And hysteria's continued use as a synonym for over-emotional or deranged was a part of this whole perspective and how we saw emotion, and especially women's emotion, because it's worth noting here how many of the problems physicians were attempting to fix were all about female patients and were not problems when the same issues presented in male patients. So this was really about how we need to fix and control female patients. This right here, what I want you to take in, is big business already in the 19th century. Because as women's emotional outbursts could cost men big opportunities, this was a way to control them. And by having these diagnoses, any woman not in control could easily be locked up in an insane asylum. So I think it's important to look at this historical context. Now, let's move to the mid-20th century, where lobotomies were used as an attempt to cut away the negative feelings. The inventor of the lobotomy, Dr. Freeman, believed that mental illness was related to overactive emotions, and that by cutting the brain, he could cut away these feelings. So it's not by accident that we still have these modalities today that are all about how do we get rid of, how do we cut ourselves away from experiencing negative emotion. We go back to this mid-20th century beliefs and where the lobotomy began. And this was the context of how people were perceiving and understanding negative emotion. So then came the controversy of the lobotomy, thankfully. And psychology was struggling to be seen as legit once again, which is when psychiatry and the pharmaceutical industry came together. Psychotropic meds came into play right around the same time in the 1950s. Doctors saw that drugs that they were using to treat other conditions seemed to help decrease some patients' psychotic symptoms. So at first, the theory was to block or find the right balance of dopamine. And then when that wouldn't regulate and they couldn't get it regulated for long periods of time, then it turned to a focus on serotonin levels, as well as more variations of drugs, all set to get the chemical messengers of the brain to behave. And this is when pharmacology started to take over what is now considered mental health. And what I beg you to keep in mind, that we have these theories on serotonin levels, and yet there is no way to measure brain serotonin levels in people who are alive. So isn't it fascinating that we have all this quote unquote scientific proof, which I'll discuss a little bit more why we should be leery of it, but we're basing it on questionable studies. If we can't measure brain serotonin levels in people that are alive, how are we making these assumptions, especially when statistics keep showing us that we should be looking at this differently? This is why more and more neuroscientists are recognizing that neurochemical explanations are failing people. In fact, psychiatrist Dr. Daniel Carlett has said psychiatry has become a proving ground for outrageous manipulations of science in the service of profit. To support that idea, there was a large non-industry funded study that followed 4,000 patients. They were treated with all sorts of psychotropic meds, Celexa, Wellbutrin, Zoloft, and it found that after a year, only 3% of those 4,000 patients were in remission. Only 3% were out of that state, of that emotional state that they were struggling with, and can say that they were in remission. So what I want to paint a picture of here is that when emotions were attempted to be understood only in a linear, rational perception, which, by the way, was male-based, white male-based, that's when we lost the soul to psychology. Egos, profit, and proving oneself to be legitimate took precedence over ancient wisdom and understanding. That is why each week I want to share with you in the Emotional Empowerment Podcast, the emotional empowerment lens, the emotional empowerment perception, because it's reintroducing you to the lost wisdom of the sacred feminine that is within all of your feelings. This is a way to understand your emotions that is not forced positivity, that it's not trying to make you something that you are not. It is a process that sees you and helps you to see, understand, and love yourself. And in doing so, you get out of your own way. Because that's what I always struggled with. I was constantly getting in my own way, and I thought my emotions were the problem that were causing me to get in my own way. And I know what it's like to be emotionally sensitive or emotionally struggling person. You have the tendency to think it's you. And what I want to continue to give to you is that it's not you. And there's another lens which really allows you to stop fighting aspects of who you are and understand them in their integrity and wisdom and, again, love. So let's integrate this feminine approach to emotion with modern science. And how I love to do this is with epigenetics. So if you haven't heard about epigenetics, you can research it. It is everywhere. Last fall, I was working with Marquette University here in Milwaukee, which is where I live, and there were epigenetics professors bringing in the psychology piece and were really excited about this emotional empowerment lens. So let me share with you why. So prior to epigenetics, we used to believe that our genes form who and how we are. What epigenetics has demonstrated is that our genes are in fact controlled and manipulated by how your mind perceives and interprets your environment. Let me say that again. Epigenetics has demonstrated that your genes are controlled by how your mind is perceiving and interpreting your world, your life, and you. So this is huge because how you perceive situations and your environment is largely emotionally based. We make decisions that are based on our emotions and we're not even aware of it. That's why so much advertising is geared to us emotionally, because we will make decisions based on our emotions more than we do our thinking mind. And especially for those who think that they're making decisions based on their thinking mind, they're actually more ego-based or more emotionally based in a way that's not working for you. It's working against you. So I'm not talking that this is impacting your interpretations a little bit. I'm talking your emotions literally interpret your perceptions of the world a million times faster than your conscious thoughts. So this is based on the research of Dr. Bruce Lipton, who found that the subconscious mind operates at 40 million bits of data per second, whereas the conscious mind processes at only 40 bits per second. So what this means is when we change our emotional interpretation of our experiences, what we're actually doing is positively shifting your neuroplasticity. How we ultimately do this is changing the way your brain's neurons assign emotional associations. So I know I'm kind of getting thick into this brain piece, but just stick with me. It'll all make sense. So what we're doing as we integrate the empowered language of our emotions, we're creating new imprinted emotional associations within your subconscious. The way in which you perceive your life experiences then changes on a subconscious level. So by taking the steps, what happens is you'll create new experiences that change your emotional interpretations in a positive way. You're going to see yourself differently. You're going to because you're understanding yourself from the lens of love rather than from contraction and fear. The more you implement, the more you practice, the more you are going to be able to live healthier and a better quality life, regardless of your genetic makeup. Doesn't matter what you genetically started with. This is exactly why people come from the same family and one person can struggle with a mental health problem such as depression and other family members don't. So the job of the subconscious, what we're working with here and why it's so important that we work on an emotional level is because the job of your subconscious is to create reality out of its program and to prove that the program is true, that it's accurate. Dr. Lipton insists that it takes a lot more than thinking to change your subconscious programming. Why? Because as soon as you forget to be conscious, the subconscious is back in charge again. This is happening so much more often than you would like to think. The conscious mind is operating 1 to 5% of the time. That's it. All the other times, it's subconscious programming. That's 99 to 95% of the time. So what you are going to be learning through this podcast is how emotional empowerment is understanding the signal to each of your negative feelings. Each negative feeling is unique for a reason. So when other modalities talk about how to heal your mental health or your negative feelings, they kind of have this like overarching theme. You know, it's your diet and inflammation and it's you're not thinking correctly or it's your brain chemistry. But they don't really tell you why you feel a specific feeling compared to the others. Like, why is someone struggling with anger and another person is struggling with sadness and yet it's the same thing? It's like inflammation in our gut. Now, I'm not saying we should, again, I said this in episode one, I try to eat healthy and I do a good job of it most of the time. I meditate, I incorporate aspects that have been proven to be good for our health. And those eating clean and meditating and exercising are good for your health. What I want to give to you is more into why you feel the way you do and what you can do about it and to help you start thinking about this differently. And so it's not just one negative emotion that's on the rise. We've got anger, we've got anxiety, we've got sadness that continues to rise. Why is this emotion or whatever that emotion is for you, why is it showing up for you? And emotional empowerment is the only process that I know of. And a lot of people have come to me from all different parts of the world sharing with me so many cool processes, which is beautiful. But this is the only process that says, this is why anger is coming up so strongly for you. This is why you're depressed. This is what your anxiety is about. This is why you're frustrated. This is why you're guilt-ridden. And not in a way that shames you, in a way that turns on a light. So each one of your negative feelings is unique, has a specific purpose and signal. What's going on when you feel that feeling and what to do about it. Once you learn this empowered language, You form new emotional associations. Anger is not going to have the same meaning to you. You're not going to see it through this limited fear-based lens we've been taught to see anger or anxiety or jealousy or whatever negative feeling you're feeling. They're going to have a different meaning and understanding to you. And this new understanding just clicks. It just turns on the light. And the more the empowered language of your emotions is practiced, your subconscious interpretations change and shift more positively. So in other words, the way you perceive you and your life changes to work for you rather than against you. So in essence, you utilize your emotions, which are a part of your subconscious, to create a new program within your subconscious mind that ultimately creates a new reality for you because you're shifting you. It's in the science. So what I'm suggesting through this podcast is what came forward in one of my favorite movies, A Star is Born, where Bradley Cooper sings, "Maybe it's time to let the old ways die," right? If you have been told, and told primarily by white male leaders, that you are the thinker of your thoughts, so continue to press upon your thoughts differently. And if that doesn't work, there's something wrong with you, that you're not pressing hard enough on your thoughts. What I want you to know, there's nothing wrong with you. There's not even anything wrong with that modality if it works for you. And for those that lead their life from a more rational level versus an emotional one, I see why that makes sense. However, if you process life on a more emotional level, or even if you process life more rationally with your rational mind, but you're stuck in an area or you're struggling with one of your emotions or more, this emotional lens, this empowered emotional lens, will support you. If you have been using psychotropic meds with less than ideal results, try to learn this empowered language of your emotions and let's see what happens. I've had many students and clients decide on their own without me knowing that after understanding their emotions from this empowered lens, they no longer needed their anti-anxiety or anti-depression medication. Now, this isn't anything that I promise, but I've seen it enough times that I can say this has happened. And it's happened from people all different walks of life in different parts of the world. What I want to leave you with is that it is science that is trying to catch up with spirituality, not the other way around. And oftentimes we get fed that things need to be scientifically based for me to believe in it. And it's science that's always trying to catch up with spirituality. It's one of the reasons I've had the support of Dr. Bernie Siegel from the very beginning of founding the International Institute for Emotional Empowerment. This is why he became faculty, because he was looked at as nuts, that as a physician, he was incorporating prayer into his medical practice. All his colleagues thought what he was doing was unprofessional. There was no scientific proof until decades later, more and more people witnessed the healing power of prayer and science caught up and did studies, which in fact prove prayer impacts the speed of recovery and outcomes. Meditation and yoga have been practiced for centuries and science is finally catching up with these spiritual practices and saying, yeah, they're effective. And the great thing is that we are able to make them more normalized. These practices aren't seen as so woo-woo and out there. And so it's not really whether you're spiritual or not. It's, can I integrate this into my life? And that's my invitation to you. You don't have to have a spiritual lens or even my spiritual lens for this to work. I've worked with plenty of people where their lens was different, and yet the language still works. But again, I think it's important to bring in the spiritual and bring in that this, for me, has been a feminine perspective, an ancient feminine wisdom that is important to bring forward in this time when the old ways are dying and they're screaming and they're freaking out. And it's an opportunity for this new way to come in. It's an opportunity to say, with all this noise and chaos and hurt and pain in the old ways, is there an opportunity then for us to see things differently? So the truth of the matter is, when it comes to science, when it comes to what you are presented as, quote unquote, scientific proof, is it takes decades for that to show up to you, if it's not opposed. And if there are big institutions that make billions of dollars based on not telling you the truth, it's going to take a lot longer. But that doesn't mean you can't benefit long before then. It's your choice. My invitation to you is to integrate ancient wisdom with science, to understand yourself. And in understanding yourself, I believe you love yourself more. The more love you have within, the more love you have to give. We all do. This is the basis of ancient traditions and spiritual text. I've studied many different religions and find value in all of them, because when you get to the core of each one, it really is about love. One of the ancient texts I like to study are the Gnostic texts, and Gnostic means knowledge. From what I've read thus far, there's so much psychology in these ancient texts, which blows my mind again. And what it's saying is that it's about knowing and understanding yourself from the lens of love. That's what I get when I read the Gnostic text. And that is exactly what your emotions are trying to teach you to do, to know yourself from the lens of love, so that you are best able to fulfill your life's purpose. Your emotions are not an easy teacher, and I'll be clear about that, but it becomes easier when you understand the language. So why aren't they an easy teacher? Because we've got to face our fears, because we've got to be molded and shaped to fulfill our purpose, and that requires being in our truth and courage. So in the next episode, I'm going to give you more practical ways to address your ego and fear from the loving, life-affirming lens of emotional empowerment that will allow you to live your life with greater truth and freedom. Thank you so, so much for your openness, your expansiveness, and your willing to join me. And I can't wait to see you next time. Take care. Thank you for listening to the Emotional Empowerment Podcast. If you've enjoyed the program, please leave us a rating and review on iTunes to help us spread the message about how to use your emotions as a tool for spiritual and personal growth. To receive free training in emotional empowerment, visit www.iiee.training. That's www.iiee.training.